Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Q4 and FY23 earnings conference call of Suzlon Energy Limited, hosted by Emkay Global Financial Services. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions at the end of today's presentation. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. During this call, the company's management may make certain statements which reflect their outlook for the future or which could be construed as forward-looking statements. These statements are based on management's current expectations and are associated with uncertainties and risks as fully detailed in the company's annual report, which may cause the actual results to differ. Hence, these statements must be reviewed in conjunction with the risk that the company faces. Thank you. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Abhineet Anand from Emkay Global Financial Services. Thank you, and over to you.
Thanks, Ryan. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd first like to thank the management for giving us this opportunity to host the call. Today, we have with us the top management of Suzlon Energy Limited, being represented by Mr. J.P. Chalasani, Group CEO, and Mr. Himanshu Mody, Group CFO. I will now hand over to the management. Over to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Abhineet, and good evening to each one of you, and thank you for joining us on our Q4 FY23 earnings call. At the beginning, let me apologize to you for any inconvenience in the call, because both me and Himanshu are having sore throat, so you might hear some coughing. Okay? So it's not because there was a hard question, it's because you are not feeling well. So I hope, I'm sure you had an opportunity to review our results and investor presentation. We will share with you an overview of the industry, and we will walk you through our Q4 FY23 and full year FY23 performance. We will then take your questions. As all of us know that, with good policy initiatives from the Government of India, as well as few state governments, the wind energy sector has got much needed impetus, providing momentum for industries to kickstart the journey to net zero. The 2030 GOI target of 500 GW of non-fossil fuel-based capacity, which again, substantiated by the recent CEA report of the generation mix for 2030 demand meeting, envisages that 100 GW of wind capacity to be set up. So with the current capacity of around 43 GW, so we will need wind installations of about roughly 8 GW per annum over the next 7 years. The current recent important announcements of discontinuation of e-reverse bidding and resorting to closed bidding, coupled with the state-specific bidding for all 8 states with the pool tariff, I think we feel that would actually make us get back to the pre-FY17 level of capacity additions. FY24 wind bid plan, 2.5 GW each with SECI, NTPC, NHPC, and SJVN, that is making it to 10 GW. And as you're aware, that the first 2.5 GW, the NIT has come out a couple of days back from SECI, which is in line with the not 8 states, but at least 5 states. The same principles is that it has come out. The initiatives like ISTS waiver, the extension for COD of projects till June 2025, will again boost the C&I segment mainly. Wind repowering potential of 25 GW and the green hydrogen mission targets, the concepts like RTO and RGO obligations will further boost RE sector in a big way. We have also responded to the market requirement of a larger wind turbine through our, the S144 3 MW series. Our cumulative orders of 1,542 MW are the highest since 2019. These include the order book as on March 31, 2023, of 652 MW, plus orders secured subsequently of 890 MW. Out of this, what is more gratifying for us to say is that 780 MW is new 3 MW series, which clearly demonstrates the immense trust that our clients have in Suzlon's expertise and product technology. Our priority going forward is to pursue quality orders with a higher value and better margins. Our focus remains on execution and building our order book. Our OMS business continues to do well. It has over 16 gigawatts of renewable capacity under maintenance globally, out of which close to 40 gigawatts is in India. With a positive sectoral outlook and strong fundamentals, we at Suzlon now well equipped to leverage the market opportunity arising from energy transition. I would now like to invite Himanshu to take you through our financial performance.
Thank you, JPC sir, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I will be using slide numbers 18 to 22 of our investor presentation, which has been uploaded on our website as the reference point for my discussion during this discussion. FY23 has been a historical year for Suzlon, since the company has seen significant improvement in all key financial parameters. Our balance sheet is stronger as a result of a significant debt reduction post the rights issue. Our fundamentals have strengthened with a consistent focus on our bottom line. We are pleased to report that our consolidated net worth has turned positive after 10 years and it is at 1,099 crores for FY23. Net debt has reduced from 13,000 crores on 31st March 2020 to 1,180 crores as of 31st March 2023. This is a reduction of more than 90%. Our consolidated FY23 PAT before any exceptional items has turned positive after a period of 6 years and is at 167 crores for FY23 on a consolidated basis. This is as compared to FY22 PAT of negative 249 crores last year. With a continuous focus on deleveraging our balance sheet, we have achieved substantial reduction in our net finance costs as well. For FY23, our net finance cost stands at 401 crore, which was at 712 crores for FY22, yielding into a reduction of close to 311 crores, which is a reduction of 44% in the finance costs. Hence, there is a marked improvement on all our financial parameters, like net debt to EBITDA pre-foreign exchange is at 1.4x for FY23, vis-a-vis 7 times for FY22. And our net interest coverage ratio for FY23 is 2.1 times versus 0.9 times for FY22. Inflation for us is under control as an economy and commodity prices have also stabilized, showing great resilience going forward. With that, I'd like to conclude my presentation and we can open the floor for any question and answers that the callers may have. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use only handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we request you to restrict to two questions per participant. Our first question comes from Mohit Kumar with ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir, and congratulations on a very, very strong order book.
Thank you.
My first question is, sir, how do you see the execution in FY24 in megawatt terms? You did mention that you can reach 1.6 gigawatt, I think, which we did in 2017. Is it possible to reach that number in FY24 based on the order book, or do you think this number can be achieved in FY25? That's the first question, sir.
Yeah, obviously, we've given you our order book position as of today. So the 50 to 60%, I think almost 60% of that is for the current year, and we'll book more orders. But as far as whether we will reach 1.6, in fact, we did 17, 18 in megawatt in FY17. But I think I will only say that instead of taking a guess on me, take a guess on the country, and we will maintain 25 to 30% of whatever country adds, our market share will be to that extent. So therefore, I will leave it to you for assuming what number would be ours.
predicting a market share decline in FY 23, is it right, sir?
That is, that's primarily because the 50% of capacity, more than 50% capacity what we're supposed to add was not full scope of EPC with us, where we only supply the turbines and do the commissioning, erection commissioning, and the rest of the BOP is with the clients. So there are turbines supplied even in quarter two. A significant amount of it has not got commissioned by March 31st. We have a limited control over that. If we had that, obviously our market share would have been much higher.
Understood, sir. My second question is, sir, what are the challenges required to get back to this this high level of activity in terms of capital expenditure and working capital funding?
So, from a working capital perspective, you know, we have made a good start in securing working capital facilities for some of the orders that is currently available with us. Of course, this will keep getting built up to match with the delivery schedules of the orders. So, we don't see any significant challenges on being able to have the working capital ramp up done in time to be able to deliver on those orders.
And we already started tying up for the project.
Any capital expenditure you need to do, sir?
So capital expenditure we would not need to do certainly for FY24 other than the normal maintenance capex that we do, which is close to about 100 crores. But, you know, for FY25, we may need to start placing certain advances and orders in FY24. So that may be a delta of another 100 to 150 crores over and above our maintenance capex that we may need to do to augment certain capacities for FY25.
Yeah, that's mainly for our 3-megawatt platform augmentation.
Understood, sir. Thank you and all the best, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Gautam C. Jain with GCJ Financial Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, congratulations for a very good set of numbers. My first question pertains to your turbine, you know, segment. You are still not making money if I look at your EBIT. So can you guide us when we will be able to make money in this wind turbine business?
So hi, Gautam. On the EBIT, you may be right, but at the EBITDA level for FY23 in the WTG business, we've reported a 96 crores of EBITDA for the full year. Of course, at the EBITDA level, because the depreciation of close to 250 crores, which gets reduced between the EBITDA and EBIT, still continues to be negative. But you know, on the EBITDA level, also for the WTG business, despite lower volumes in FY23 as compared to FY22, we've been able to deliver a healthy EBITDA margin.
Okay, so what maximum margin we can achieve in this business in terms of EBIT margin?
So, well, EBIT margin, again, I won't comment on. I will stick to my answer on EBITDA margins. Okay. EBITDA margins in this business certainly can go up to single high digits in percentage terms.
Okay, around 8 to 9%, right?
Single high digits, yes, I would say.
Yeah, 8 and then another category.
Okay. And the second question pertains to your, you know, execution capability. You have written in the presentation that you have capacity to, I think, execute more than 2,000 megawatt, right?
Yeah, that's what we established earlier in FY17, if you remember that. We did that.
And you also said that, said that 8 to 10 gigawatt, you know, the orders need to be placed by different companies. Wind power energy. So how much we expect to get from that, you know, orders in next 3 years or 4 years? Can you guide us on that?
No, it's like as we said that our aim is always to be a number one and number two in the country in terms of market share. And more important than that is that we will be plus 25%, let's say around 30% is the market share what we will aim at. So this is 10, you can't really take the 10 gigawatt bidding because they'll get bid at different times and the CODs will come in different years. So the year of bidding is not the indication of when the actual COD would happen.
Okay, so we'll try to maintain 30% market share.
Yep.
Okay, and my last question is, so we will have a good amount of cash generation in 2024 as well. So can the further reduction in net debt be seen in 2024?
So certainly there will be reduction in the net debt in 2024. It may not be at the same pace as what the company has seen in the last few years, but I think through whatever cash flow generation as per the amortization schedule of our loan, yes, we will continue to see the debt reduction.
Okay. Any guidance on your ANC business for growth in the future, which is also stagnant for the last 6-7 years?
Which business? OMS. See, OMS is there are two ways of business growth. One is the turbine business, what we do. So obviously, as our the turbine sales keep increasing year to year, to that extent the growth would happen. Obviously, you know that as a country itself, there's a subdued numbers in the last 5 years. Post FY17, if you see last 4 or 5 years, as a country, we did anywhere between 1800 minimum level to maximum 2200 megawatts. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's not just us, as a country, we're not been growing, whatever the reason. Mm-hmm. But whatever has been our share, that growth has been there. So therefore, it is not something different from the sector. We've been growing as per the sector. In future, as we keep growing, that will grow. And then obviously, we will also look at growing by the multi-brand, the turbines.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Vivek Ganguly with Nine Rivers Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. I had two questions. One regarding, you all recently won a 300 megawatt supply order with Torrent. Now, would it be fair to assume that it is a multi-year contract? And if that is the case, then how do you all manage the raw material volatility risk associated with such projects?
Some of the basic things is we're hedged in the contract as the commodity pricing, whether it's a steel and maybe the foreign exchange. So that is one way of hedging in the contract as a possible. Second way is that we do have a long-term relationship with our suppliers. So therefore, we give them an upfront the indication of what we want, and we lock in the prices evenly. So these are two ways we try to see that we don't grow beyond our estimates.
Okay. My second question is regarding the performance of the Chinese companies in the domestic market. So there are, Goldwyn is a very large company. I don't know whether they are in India, but Envision apparently is. So how are they performing and are there any regulatory, steps being taken by the government, or are they free to operate in the industry? If you can give shed some light on that would be very helpful.
Obviously, we are handful with our own FIR, so therefore I don't want to get into whether they have a regulatory hurdles. But only thing I want to say is that if the market is going to be what we are envisaging, okay, like 10 gigawatt bidding for every year and things, there is a pie for everyone. So I don't think that's an issue. Whether they will have a hurdles or not, I don't think it's right for us to comment upon.
Right. And what is their market share right now?
Their market share?
Yeah, in the domestic, in the Indian scenario.
It's not right for me to comment about others' market shares. So we can talk about our market share.
Okay, thank you. That's all from me.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rohit Bharwani, an investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity. I had a couple of questions. My first question is, how much are the carry forward losses at consolidated level, and related to it, what is the expected tax rate for FY24?
So for FY24, I can confirm that at the consolidated level, there will be no tax outgo because we would be utilizing our carry forward losses. And the total carry forward losses on the balance sheet as of today is close to about a little less than 2,000 crores.
Okay, sir. My next question is, realization has gone up if we see on quarter-on-quarter basis. in wind turbine business, it is around 6.10 CR per megawatt. So can we expect this to continue in this financial year?
So I think the margins that we've been able to report in H2 of FY23, we should be able to maintain those margins going forward for this financial year.
If we look at quarter three, the per megawatt realization was 5.65, and in this quarter it has come around 6.10. So you are saying we will maintain the margins of H2, which will be around 5.826 megawatt. Is it right?
So at the contribution level, we should be able to maintain our margins at mid-teens, you know, as we go along. So, you know, I don't want to comment on specific crores, but mid-teens is what we would be able to
do. Okay, sir. Okay. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Himanshu Kansal with Vijit Global Securities Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations for the good set of numbers. I just want to understand that as far as the offshore installations are concerned, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it is the bigger turbines that are needed and they are feasible. So it's like 15 megawatt kind of turbine. I just wanted to understand that government has also started pushing for the offshore in the recent few months. So how ready we are for taking on the offshore project?
We are aware of that, and we are aware of the program when the offshore turbines requirement will come in India, and we are getting prepared to be ready by the time the demand is there in India. We would be ready, matching the demand schedule.
Okay, thank you. Just one more question. In terms of reduction in the interest cost, if you can just give us some idea as to how much more interest cost can go down this year?
So, you know, this year, of course, difficult for me to give you a number, but as I said earlier, compared between FY22 to FY23, the interest cost reduction is about 44%. It certainly won't be to that extent because, you know, there may be working capital facilities, which is by way of non-fund-based limits, which we will be ramping up for execution of these orders. So whilst our term loan from, you know, gross debt of 1900 crores will keep reducing based on the cash flows, but at the same time our LC and bank guarantee commissions that we need to incur for working capital will also be comprising a part of the interest costs. So yes, whilst there may be a reduction on the 401 crores, but certainly not as high reduction as we've seen in the last few years.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ishan Bhargava with MK Global Financial Service. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So you mentioned that there are no current challenges on the working capital, but just checking on another aspect. Last quarter, you mentioned that we were in advanced discussions with 4 to 5 institutions for working capital. So how have those discussions progressed? Could you give a flavor of that?
So without giving names of specific institutions, I can confirm to you that as we speak today, we are sitting on close to 1,000 crores of sanctioned working capital limits available with the company.
From those institutions?
From those institutions, yeah. And we are, of course, in discussions with the same institutions to ramp up the working capital or the project-specific funding to deliver on those orders. So certainly it's a marked improvement over the last quarter, and we see this continuing from quarter to quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ritesh Poladia with Girik Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Sir, just to continue on the previous question on working capital, sir, yesterday there is an announcement of enabling resolution for working capital conversion into equity. So when you have a not significant challenges, then why to pass such a resolution and what's the quantum of this, if you can share?
So, this was a CP of one of the working capital lenders without taking the name, that in case that there is a default on the working capital facilities that have been sanctioned by them, and as and when we draw down those working capital, in case there is a default, then the lender has a right to convert the outstanding loan into equity shares of the company. This is a fairly standard enabling resolutions for most kind of indebtedness that companies take. So even when we refinanced our facilities last year, a similar enabling resolution under what's called 62(3) of the Companies Act was obtained. So it is in line with that. So it is, you know, while of course the resolution has been passed by the board and it will be tabled before the shareholders, but it is more a CP compliance than in actual, the chances of it being implemented in actuality given our current financial status is very remote.
So this enabling resolution come into effect only in the case of default and not otherwise. Is that understanding
correct? That's right. So the lender needs the comfort that in case of a default, the shareholders have approved a resolution so that there is no hurdles for them to convert the outstanding loan into equity shares should the situation arise.
And sir, what's the interest rate currently going on for the working capital for you guys?
So working capital, you know, in our case, it's all non-fund based facilities. So we typically pay a LC or a bank guarantee commission or a letter of comfort commission, which we take from NBFCs. So that ranges anywhere between 2 to 3% of the LC or BG commission that we get issued from them. So it's not a term loan facility, you know, where we pay sort of close to 10% on our existing borrowings. It's a little different construct.
Sure. And any advance available for from this PSU or the government companies? And is there an interest component to it?
So we don't get advances. Of course, when we issue bank guarantees to our customers who we've taken orders from, so what we give is an advance bank guarantee. And against the advance bank guarantee is when, you know, our customers release the advance to us. Against the orders. So to that extent, it is cash neutral, and which is why all our working capital is non-fund based and not fund based.
Yeah, that's it from my side. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from CA Arun Maruti with Shublab Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, am I audible, sir?
Yeah.
But thanks for the opportunity, sir, and congratulations for the good results for this time. So my question is with regard to the facilities of other some inactive players whose O&M activity is not being done by them. So are we envisage any opportunity in that particular activity?
As I said, some time back from the service business, looking.
Yes.
From our turbines, we are also looking at the growth in terms of multi-brand turbines. That means which are not our turbines. So therefore, we would keep exploring the opportunities. But then, obviously, with them, we need to be sure that we will be able to deliver the same level of service what we provide for our turbines, because we have set standard with our clients. There is a set of expectations when this is done. And the moment we're confident we can provide that service and making a reasonable margins, we will acquire. And we're in the market. We keep doing it. Already we've done some turbines, and we'll continuously keep doing that.
Okay, sir. And on the casting and forging activities, would you like to share something on that that will be helpful?
I see the way the demand for wind turbines is increasing, so then obviously the demand for the components is increasing. So therefore, our foundry division is seeing a significant the order inputs, and they are also working towards the improvement in productivity by doing some debottlenecks so that we can increase our capacity for this year and next year and subsequent years. And even in forging units, we are finding the order intake increase this year. So we are seeing a growth there along with the parent company. So, and also there, they just don't do only Suzlon, they do non-Suzlon as well. In fact, the non-Suzlon customers, who are all our competitors, okay, like every single competitor of ours in the wind sector, are the customers, are the clients for SE4G. So everybody goes to them. So therefore, in fact, their non-Suzlon business is, let's say the Suzlon business is 40%, non-Suzlon business is 60-70%. And also they have an export business. And we see a good growth potential there.
So can you share some ballpark number for the guidance that will be helpful? Sir, what kind of growth we are looking in that particular business?
It's like a growth. What happens in the wind sector is what you can expect the growth there.
Okay.
Can we move on to the question?
Our next question comes from the line of Faisal Hawa with H.G. Hawa. Please go ahead.
After the massive shift to renewable energies in the future, would it be like too optimistic to believe that we could have like a more like a 1 lakh crore order book with something very similar to what happened to us in the early 2000s? Where we were like continuously overbooked with orders, do you see that kind of situation coming back anytime soon? As most of the players who are really very much adept at recognizing this oncoming flow of orders are not as well prepared as they used to be.
Obviously, I don't want to put a number to it, but I can say that yes, the policy is talking about, and see, there are two growths that are happening now in the wind sector. Earlier, we used to mainly depend upon the utility sector, where backed up by the PPAs used to be significant, and the retail segment used to be small. But now, with the C&S segment growing significantly, so there is a part of it coming from there as well. We don't need to depend just upon the grid. I can only say is that we will be pick and choose now on the orders, of which would give us one is good margins, and the second thing is easy to execute, and the third is who is the client, so that we can have a long-term relationship in terms of OMS. So I don't, in my opinion, the order, at least for the next few quarters, orders would not be a constraint. It's a question of how much can we pick up in terms of our ability to execute, and also the good quality order as well as quality clients. That's what I would put it as. But directionally, yes, you're right, there will be more orders in the sector.
And then can you just tell us of two or three shop floor improvements that we have made to really cut down on the order execution time and to really increase margins for our company?
See, earlier what used to happen, as I said sometime back, if you look at even, let's say, the highest we did in FY17, the entire 1800 megawatt was done by us, EPC basis, mostly, completely on the turnkey basis, end-to-end by us. Okay. That stretches us in terms of, acquisition of land and, number of cranes and our people, ability and project management. But now what is happening is that because we're having a mix of orders, where some part of it is EPC, some part of it we call it as SAE, which is supply, installation and commissioning, where the clients are doing, and some people in fact just taking the turbines, they are doing the erection under our supervision. So with that, our capability to execute more orders in terms of execution part of it is increasing because there are supplementary efforts from the clients as well compared to what we did in FY17. So actually speaking, our ability to execute projects today on the capacity wise is much higher than FY17 because we are supplemented with the clients as well.
And so how are we viewing the whole offshore wind power? Will it finally come into any kind of a majority, or it's still time to go?
I'm sure that you know more than me because you people keep tracking the sector much more than the offshore is our aspiration, the country. Obviously, that we need to build the ability. There is an aspiration there at the level. So we need to build that ability, and how long it takes for that ability to be built, and when the first project comes, it's anybody's guesswork. But what we're doing internally is that we don't miss the bus. We are preparing ourselves as and when that opportunity arises, that we will be there in the market.
Any orders coming from overseas to us, or are we not even looking at that?
Right now, no. There is enough in India for us, so we don't want to take our eye out of India.
Okay. Thanks a lot, sir.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Himanshu Kansal with Vijit Global Securities Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just wanted to understand, how much can we expect from the sale of the non-core assets this year?
So again, I actually don't want to quantify a number here, but certainly this financial year, as in FY24, we would see sale of one of our substantial non-core assets, but difficult for me to give you a number or an indication on the same.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Uttam Kumar Srimal with Axis Securities Limited. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, what would be our revenue guidance and EBITDA margin guidance for FY24?
So, as I said, EBITDA margin guidance remains the same that we saw in the H2 of FY23, which would be similar for the group. Revenue guidance would let you draw your own conclusion. We've said that we have close to 1,500 megawatts of confirmed order book, of which close to more than 50%, about 55% of that is for FY24. And in FY23, we did 664 megawatts. The revenue was close to 6,000 crores for the same. So if we draw even a 60% of 1,500 megawatts in order book, that's close to about 850 to 900 megawatts in orders for FY24. That's being
on hand,
which is close to a 30% plus increase in order book. So you can extrapolate the revenue increase from that.
Okay, that's all from my side. Okay.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one. Our next question comes from the line of Rohit Bahirwani, an investor. Please go ahead.
Just one final question. As per my understanding, 3 megawatt series have higher margins as compared to traditional wind projects. So can you provide some sense as to how much variation is there between the two?
It's not really the higher margins for the turbine, but basically when you go to the higher capacity of the turbines, the BOP cost comes down, balance of plant cost. Okay. So overall margins for the clients would increase at the project level. The margins at the turbine level would more or less remain the same. And second thing is the margins also will keep improving as we keep supplying more and more. There's a cost out and you establish your product cycle and things like that. But but fundamentally, when you increase the size of the turbine, it's the project level cost comes down. I hope I clarified you.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much and all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ritesh Aloria with Girik Capital. Please go ahead. Ritesh, your line is unmuted. You could please ask your question.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. On 3 megawatt series, how economic is different from this 2 megawatt, if you can give us some idea, because I believe definitely your efficiency is much higher, but so is the cost. So what's the net gain, or is it the economic factor?
No, I think the previous question I answered with respect to the turbine, when you keep increasing the size, so it's not necessarily the cost per megawatt of the turbine comes down, but cost per megawatt of the project comes down. Because if you say that you are doing 300 megawatt project, if you are putting 2 megawatt turbine, you need 150 footprints which are spread much over area. One is land cost increases. Second thing is your entire BOP cost, your evacuation cost, everything goes up. But the moment you make that as 3 megawatt, only 100 footprints, so your BOP cost comes down. The cost of the project comes down, but not the cost of the turbine.
So the economics, like the IRR for the developer goes up.
Yes. More than that is the, I think I look at a higher capacity even the world over is done, because the you keep increasing the capacity the way we want to go from 40 gigawatt to 100 gigawatt. Your availability of land keeps coming down. Okay. So therefore, the two things would happen with this, the requirement of land comes down significantly. And the second issue is that in wind projects, major issue is that keep getting issue of pathways. Okay, your ROWs, not just during the period of execution, even during the period of operations, because they are in the open area. Those troubles keep coming down, in addition to the project level cost coming down. But significant thing is, the main reason for the turbine size also going up is that your land area required and your the constraints in terms of operating comes down. In addition to some extent, the BOP cost comes down.
Sure, sir. That explains. And sir, what's the replacement demand scenario looks like for next 2 years?
It's like you mean repowering?
Yeah, because those which are like 20, 25 years old need replacement. So, what's the scenario look like in next 2-3 years? What no, kind of additional demand is
there? Wherever. So we are reaching to that stage, the because the turbine's quality appears to be still good. So most of our clients, these are mainly the retail clients at that point of time. You know? We're talking about 2025 years back, we didn't have a big IDPs or utility customers, so not there at that point of time. So what they're saying is that, okay, fine, we want you to do a life extension of these turbines. So they offer us a one-time the price for refurbishing the turbine and then keep running it. So it's a win-win for both. So they continue to get the revenue from that turbine, and for us it's good that our OMS revenue will continue. That's what is happening in most of the cases where the turbine service at age. Repowering or replacing is not picked up at, but that's an area which we all have been talking for, I think, 5-7 years, but it's still to pick up. It might pick up in future. But right now most of the contracts for us are happening that way.
Also, could you be on the O&M business, we did about 1900 crore, so, and it's almost like flat for the year. So what kind of growth one can expect from that?
As I said, sometimes the growth would also depend upon the amount of turbines we keep adding each year. Okay. Especially it's flat because though we added last year and this year the significant amount of turbines compared to what we were doing, but because in 19, FY20 and FY21 our capacity addition was low, those things have come now into commercial operation. Because as you know, 2 years or 3 years, we offer a free OMS period along with our turbine contract. So they come into commercial OMS after 2 years. So what you're seeing right now is that what has been commissioned in FY20 and FY21. So those are very small numbers if you see our capacity addition. That's why you're not seeing the growth. So the last year and this year turbines what we added, so obviously will come into commercial operation gradually next year and the following year. So there's always a lag of 2 years or 3 years, mostly 2 years. Most of our contracts are 2 years. From turbine addition to the commercial operation. So that's why you're seeing a bit of a low growth. But second point is as it is, as a sector as a whole, the turbine addition has not happened much. But mainly for us is that those 2 years big.
That's all from my side.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Nikhil Abhyankar with ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir, and thanks for the opportunity. So, sir, I just want you to brief us on how are the current policy measures that are announced different from the earlier ones? How tangible are the policy measure, how tangible are the results? Are you already seeing any shift in the government's tendering activities?
I think the significant change, let's understand, make it into two parts of it. One is pre-FY17 and the second is post-FY17 after the competitive bidding has come in. Pre-FY17, in fact, in FY17 as a country, we added 5.5 gigawatts, and thereafter we have not even touched 2.5 gigawatts, forget about 5.5, we not even reached 50% of it. The reason for before FY17 was that, you know, every state was doing a capacity addition, and there were feeding tariffs. This also had GBA and everything. But once the competitive bidding came in, so because the tariff was the main criteria, everybody went to the states where, it was not state specific, everybody went to the states where there is a high wind. So therefore, you went to just Gujarat and Tamil Nadu initially, all the bids. So once you get considered in that area, so then your capacity addition comes from because land issues, your evacuation issues, and various issues. Plus, the experience of reverse auction, we all seen that the tariffs have significantly fallen below the actual level what it should be. Cost-effective tariffs are not there. So that's the reason some of the projects, in fact, if you compare the bid megawatts versus the actual megawatts, there's a huge difference. These are the two reasons why fundamentally things were not moving. Those two have been corrected now. So, because one is that they changed from e-reverse auction to closed bidding. So therefore, this the criteria of, you know, gambling and getting into lower tariffs in the competition, because you're seeing that if you reduce by 5 paisa, you will get it, 2 paisa, you get it, you know, you get into that mood, would go away. It's one-time closed bid. So therefore, we will see that we expect that there will be stability of the tariffs. Second most important factor is that they said that they will do the bidding of all 8 windy states. It will be a state-specific bidding. Even if they're doing 2.5 gigawatts one bid or the 10 gigawatts in a year, it will be state-specific, and they said the maximum in a state would be 2 gigawatts. Mm-hmm. But when they go for the state-specific, because some states, because of the wind profile being low, the tariffs will be higher, and there could be a potentially a problem of PPAs not getting signed for that. So they came up with a solution that, you know, we will do a simultaneous state-specific bidding, and we'll pool all that power and then sell at a pool tariff. Right. So therefore, so that's the second aspect. One is your bidding, and the second aspect of it is your multi-states, so would increase the volume. Because these were two were the main hurdles in the last 5 years, if you look at it, from the utility point of view. Simultaneously, what has happened is that the C&A segment, which was hardly there, is now significantly picked up, because when you look at the metal industry or the cement or the refineries, everybody, if you need to do an export or you want to get to net zero because your exports will get impacted with respect to you, mm-hmm. your green steel or not, and everybody is converting now into a renewable power as a captive listing. So significant uptick has happened in the C&A. So that's had an impact. If you look at our order book, almost close to 50% we're getting from that segment, the C&A segment. So these are the two reasons, I think. One is changing the bidding term. Second is because you got into a different area called C&A segment. We see a great amount of potential, in spite of the fact that last 5 years we didn't do it.
Understood, sir. And thanks for the elaborate answer. And of the current order book, so how much of it is EPC and how much of it is the only supply?
I think roughly about 50-50 would be that. 50% would be EPC, 50% would be... In EPC, again, we have two parts of it. One is we do along with power evacuation, some we do without power evacuation. Okay, we do the power evacuation. So the 50% is both. The balance 50% would be, you know, like... pure turbine supply, turbine supply come erection, come commissioning. But BOP won't be there.
Understood. And whatever we commission after 1 to 2 years will be added into our OMS portfolio, right?
Minimum 2 years.
Minimum 2 years, okay. And sir, any plans on monetizing OMS business?
So, not yet. Of course, you know, keep looking at optimizing our capital structure from time to time. But, you know, there is nothing concrete to report. You know, as in when the situation develops or anything develops, we will, of course, under the SEBI listing norms, whatever is required public disclosure, we shall make.
Okay, sir. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Vikas Mukundan with Freelance Consultant. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, everyone. I joined the call a little late. My question is regarding this ISTS waiver till June 25, commissioning of all projects by June 25. Is that going to spur captive projects in a big way? And since you have a land bank in major wind sites, would that help in getting more orders in that segment?
See, the ISTS waiver is obviously, you know, it's for the projects that are connected on the power grid network. Okay. so not on the state network. So therefore, wherever we have a land bank, if there actually the evacuation is on the STU network, then this doesn't cover purpose. But however, having said that, ISTS waiver would actually, because it's only there up to March 25, you will see the rush of people trying to complete the project before March 25. That's also one reason why you will see that, you know, more and more orders coming in. Everybody wants to complete by March 25, pressure of that. Especially for the C&S segment, because at least for the bid segment, if the substation is delayed, not for the reason, but could not be commissioned because the substation is delayed, so they would get an extension for the ISTA. But that facility is not there for the C&S segment. So there's a big rush of C&S segment to complete the projects before the... But of course, wherever we have the land bank, the obviously is an advantage to us, whether IST is there or IST is not there. So either way, the advantage is always there because land is precious for doing wind projects.
Right, sir. Thank you so much. And one follow-up question to this itself is, how much, since you said there's a rush for such projects to be commissioned by March 25, how much of such projects could Suzlon be getting?
No, we won't get under pressure of day March 25. We have our manufacturing plan. We have our ability of which quarter, how much we produce, what we can supply. And our schedules when we give it in the contract is that it will be according to that. So therefore, obviously there will be pressure for more people asking us to take orders for that period. But if it is beyond our manufacturing capacity and supply capacity, we don't take that.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'll be back.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Nataraj Shankar, an investor. Please go ahead.
I have two questions. One is, you mentioned about the working capital of about 1,000 crores. And if I understand earlier, you had about 500 crores of working capital. Let's assume the 1,500 crores is the working capital limit. What is the order book that you can actually take? That's one. And secondly, what is the initial feedback that you're getting from the state electricity boards for wind power, which is going to be slightly more expensive than solar otherwise? Any initial feedback from them in terms of their perspective on whether it is sustainable?
Let's we take the second question first. Okay. The inexpensive is a wrong term to use by just looking at the absolute tariff number. Okay. The expensive, inexpensive depends upon when are you generating with respect to the demand. Okay. So unfortunately, because we don't have the time of the day today, so we talk about, you know, somebody is giving at 260 and Pindi is coming at 290 and things like that. So therefore, it's not. Today's current requirement, if you're seeing, the most important thing is that for 2030, there's a detailed exercise done by CEA. In fact, they split into five different nodes, as we know that, you know, east, west, south, the north and the northeast. Node-wise, they've done the analysis. And they've identified what is the demand in 2030, 8760 hours. And then they've also identified what would be the least cost option to meet that demand. In that least cost option, it comes as that that point of time, there'll be 100, it's 99,815 or something, don't call it, 100 gigawatts of wind and the 400 gigawatts of solar. Is what they're talking about is the requirement of this. So therefore, even from the least cost option, you need both. It can't be wind, it can't be solar. Okay. So sorry, 300 gigawatts of solar and 100 gigawatts of wind is what they're saying is the requirement. So pure wind, pure solar is not going to solve the purpose of meeting the demand. So therefore, this concept of which is cheaper is not going to work because you're seeing clearly, you're seeing standalone wind bids. At the central level, federal level, but you are not seeing a standalone solar bid in the last few months, and you will not see also at that level. We are only talking about hybrid RTC or the peak power or the pure wind power.
Understood. Okay.
To answer your first question, you know, assuming we have 1,500 crores of working capital, which is fully fungible between LCs and bank guarantees. I mean, that would be more than adequate for us to be able to service our FY24 orders.
Okay, that's about, let's say, 700 megawatts, approximately, give or take.
No. I don't want to.
No.
No.
That's a good try, but that's
yeah, yeah.
He is not going to answer that.
Yeah, yeah. So, but as I said, it will be more than adequate to service our FY24 orders.
Understood. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Rikin Ramesh Gopani with Capri Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for taking my question. So firstly, just to follow up to the previous point that you mentioned about the RTC bids that are coming through over the last few months. So, you know, across these RTC projects, what is there any, you know, difference in terms of the IRR that somebody makes on a standalone wind project versus an RTC hybrid project?
No, the IRR depends upon what is the tariff. It doesn't depend upon what project you're doing it. So like, if I want X percent return for my project, I will bid my tariff accordingly. Okay. So the tariff determines your return. But if you want to compromise on your return, go to lower tariff, it's a different issue. But otherwise, I'm sure that every investor or every IPP would have their own hurdle rate of return. And they will bid at that according to the tariff comes out, whether it's RTC or pure wind or the pure solar. So that's the reason you will see that in case of RTC, because the cost is higher, so you'll find the tariff also going up. That means obviously everybody is keeping the return same, but the cost being higher tariffs are coming.
Right. But in your interaction with your clients, do you understand that compared to a standalone wind project, you know, this is slightly better IRRs, or it actually is indifferent between a standalone? And also just in correlation, is in a standalone wind project today, and what IRR in your assessment based on the current tariffs at which projects are going?
So the IRR depends upon a number of factors. It's not just the tariff alone. So who am I? What is going to be my cost of funding? Okay. Many people do a different costing and then subsequently do refinancing. There are a number of factors which decide your IRR. One is in addition to your hurdle rate, what you put in. So it's impossible to say that, you know, what would be an IRR for a particular given tariff, because there are a number of other variables which will decide your the returns. But I'm assuming that the current tariffs, which are, you know, anywhere between 295, 305, 310 is what the wind is settling down. I'm assuming that's the tariff range what people are comfortable with, the hurdle rates what they're expecting. I expect.
Understood.
Obviously, earlier, whatever they put it, they're finding pressure on the returns at the tariff level. Mm-hmm. That's the reason that some time back, some of the projects are not moving forward.
Understood, sir. That is clear. And, sir, just a last question from my side is about the inflow that you expect. So in this year, I mean, what is the kind of, you know, in terms of gigawatts or megawatts, what kind of order inflow do you expect at your company?
See, we are giving you as on today.
Okay,
number.
I presentation, there is an order book of
15.
No, he's asking what do you expect.
No, so, again, difficult for us to, you know, provide you a number, but... as we've been saying, there is very active negotiations going on for a large order book size. We don't want to obviously put a number to that, but currently, given the traction in the market, both on the IPP and the CNI segment, the new order book as we secure, whilst we deliver on the existing one, the new order book that we secure also could be quite significant.
No, the only point I want to make is that the order book is not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
There are plenty of the opportunities available there. It's a question of two things would decide. One is that how much can we actually deliver the turbines in the next year. We will take order only to that. And the second is that, you know, we will cherry pick in terms of earlier we would, you know, obviously we had constraints with respect to working capital and things like that. We were picking up every project which came across. We will be cherry picking projects which would give us better margins. But looking at the market, it's not just here, everywhere it's happening. So, you know, the globally the orders are flowing. So order I don't think is an issue. Question of availability.
So, and you do not anticipate, and while you've not given a guidance on your order inflow, but in terms of market share, you see yourself, you know, either strengthening or having steady state market share in terms of new order in the country, right?
Market share, see, these two are two different things. Order intake is different, market share in terms of COD is different. So there's always a time gap between order intake versus COD. So what we will be doing COD today is orders we received earlier. What we will receive this year would be for the next year, the following year. So therefore, market share when I talked about is that amount of commissioning we will do in a year. Because only if everybody counts that, the commissioning capacity. So our guidance, whatever we gave it, we will continue to be 25 to 30% of the total capacity is in terms of the commissioned capacity.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We take our next question from the line of Abhineet Anand with MK Global Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Majority of the questions have been answered. So just two questions. One on the competition, if you can throw some light, who are the active players? We do read some on the obviously newspaper, but if you can just highlight top 3-4 players. And second, when you had indicated, you know, the government and the state pipelines of 8 to 10 gigawatt, this excludes the CNI segment, right? What type of market is there for the CNI segment, if you can highlight that as well. Thank you.
No, as I said, in the current order book, what we got is almost like 50% is what, the CNI segment. We expect moving ahead, we will continue to have a similar one. In CNI will further increase, let's say in the coming years, when you get into a green hydrogen and ammonia, which is in the beginning stage today. Okay. Now, right now, what is happening on the CNI segment is mainly the people, who are current players who want to convert or add renewable energy capacity in terms of their production to become green production, whether it's the steel, cement, refining, these people. But the demand in terms of CNI for the green hydrogen would significantly come up in the next couple of years. So there will be a constant flow of it. In my opinion, frankly speaking, that if you have a 100, let's say, megawatts of a bit, at least 40, 50 megawatts, if not more, would be from CNI in that ratio.
And on the competition side, sir?
Competition is everyone is aware. I think the whether you call for the competition or talk about players in the sector. So you have Envision, you have Siemens Gamesa, you have GE, the main players, and Argonaut. So these are the main players.
Okay, just one last one. Sir, this O&M services, any large capacity that is existing, our PPA structure in the next few years?
Come again?
So, see, we would be doing around 13 gigawatt of O&M right now, right, in our kitty, as I understand.
Yeah, about 14 gigawatt.
About 14 gigawatt. So, some of those we would have got in earlier years, maybe a decade back as well, right? So, I'm just trying to understand any large capacities in the next 2-3 years that are exiting, going to exit the O&M services?
No, this is what I answered. It's not that 10 years old will not, right? But question is that, if something has crossed 20-25 years,
yeah,
is what it ends. That's where the previous question I answered is that till now, right now, whatever is that is happening, is mostly happening in the retail sector, because that point of time only the retail sector was there. They are actually, most of them, most of them are what they're trying to do is that they refurbish the turbine, means like whatever little bit you need to do are refurbishing and then operate that thing, even if they don't have a PPA because they think that they can sell in the market. Today that opportunity is available. So we have, and as far as for us, it's good that we get one time fee of refurbishment and we get extension of our OMS services. It's a win-win for both. And even if the PPA is not there, these people are saying I will still do it because it's cost of generation is very low. It's a volt turbine, depreciated plant, and I can sell it in the exchange and I'll get money.
Okay, that was helpful. Thanks a lot. Those were my questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. On behalf of MK Global Financial Services, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.